Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big money
at Menards. This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
We're taught all our lives that we should be leery of trusting strangers. We don't know them, so we don't know what they're capable of. On the flip side, we feel we are safe when we're in the company of friends. They are the ones who know our secrets, our fears, our loves. They know our dreams, and they know our regrets. With them, we often don't worry about their intentions. But what about those times we should? In our case this week, a man went missing while in the company of his friends. Was there one of them who only pretended to care, whose allegiances lie elsewhere? Someone whom he would have been far better off to avoid than to befriend. This is the case of Michael Gourley.
Welcome to Coffee and Cases, where we like our coffee hot and our cases cold. My name is Allison Williams.
And my name is Maggie Dameron. We will be telling stories each week in the hopes that someone out there with any information concerning the cases will take those tips to law enforcement so justice and closure can be brought to these families. With each case, we encourage you to continue in the conversation on our Facebook page, Coffee and Cases Podcast, because, as we all know, conversation helps to keep the missing person in the public consciousness, helping keep their memories alive. So sit back, sip your coffee, and listen to what's brewing this week.
Sleuthhounds, I am flying solo this week since Maggie is home with a sick baby, so please send prayers and well wishes her way, and I'm hoping it doesn't translate over the audio, but I've got a summer cold or flu or some kind of crud going on too, so please excuse the little raspiness in the voice this week. But even though it's just me, I wanted to share with you a case that desperately needs our attention. Our case this week is one that happened very close to us, as it is a Kentucky case. This one brings us to the small town of Junction City, Kentucky, a town of fewer than 3,000 people in Boyle County that is part of the Danville micropolitan area. Now, can I just say that in my whole life, I've heard tons of times about metropolitan areas, but before researching this case, I had never seen the term micropolitan area. Apparently, the difference is that a metropolitan area must have at least one urban area of at least 50,000 residents. Micropolitan, on the other hand, requires at least one urban area of between 10 and 50,000 residents, with Danville having around 17,000. Junction City fits the bill. While there hasn't been an influx of people moving to the much smaller Junction City, it has been a place to travel through for quite some time. As a matter of fact, it got its name because the Louisville and Nashville Railroad went through town, and decades later, the Cincinnati Southern Railway came through and intersected the previous rail lines, thus Junction City. It was a meeting place, but it is also the place of a disappearing, as Michael Gorley did on May 17th, 2015. Michael was from nearby Stanford, Kentucky, another small town of a little less than 4,000 that is one of Kentucky's oldest cities, founded in 1775. Roughly 200 years after the founding of that city, Sandra Hasty brought son Michael Gorley into this world on December 22, 1976, just before Christmas in Casey County, Kentucky. I'm going to pause here for a moment to let you know that because this case has not gotten a lot of media coverage, much of the personal information provided by family is coming from the coverage of this case by the Murder Police podcast, hosted by our friends David and Wendy Lyons. So I want to give them a shout out here before I share information that came from their interviews. I will also be placing a link to both of their episodes on this case, as well as a link to their podcast in our show notes. They do phenomenal and important work, so please check them out. In an interview David conducted with Michael's mom, Sandra, she recalled what a good baby Michael was, even from the very moment she brought him home from the hospital. He slept through the night, that very first night. Sandra remembered her mom running in to get Sandra and them both rushing to make sure he was okay, clearly thinking that something was wrong, since what newborn sleeps through the entire night? But Michael sure did. And from that moment, he was such a joy to his mom. As Michael grew up, primarily in Junction City, after a brief stint in Florida with his mom, Michael and his sister, who, though younger, was in the same grade as Michael, grew closer. And Michael developed a love for football and for motorcycles. But what made so many love to be around him was that he's remembered as a jokester by those who knew him. Because of that likability, even though in his late teens and adult years he moved around a lot with his mom, his family and his childhood friends were always happy when he made his way back home to Kentucky. Michael's sister Jennifer told the Murder Police the best story about the pull to return home to Kentucky that I just have to share. She said, quote, "Michael's a homebody. Kentucky's his home. So no matter where he went, Kentucky is where he always wanted to be. He never was one that he wanted to be by himself. He always wanted to be around family," end quote. And she continues by recalling that her dad and her dad's girlfriend at the time had dropped Michael off at college in Texas, but their dad and his girlfriend decided to make a vacation out of it on the way back to Kentucky, making some pit stops along the way. Well, only a day or two after dropping Michael off, here came Michael strolling in the door where his sister Jennifer worked. She was in shock seeing him and said something like, "Aren't you supposed to be in Texas?" And he just responded with, "I didn't like it." Michael actually made his way back to Kentucky before their father even made it back. Despite college not necessarily being Michael's cup of tea, he kept himself busy with work, though he did have some trouble with the law at some point. According to an article by Abigail Roberts for the Interior Journal, published February 2nd, 2023, Michael had previously been in jail. His mom told Roberts that the car Michael had been riding in was pulled over, and every single one of the four people in the car, Michael included, was arrested on drug trafficking charges. However, while two of the individuals were convicted of those charges, Michael and one other person in the car were released sometime around May 12th, 2015. But only 5 days later, Michael Gorley would disappear. May 17th, 2015 seemed like any other day. That morning, Michael was planning to go meet up with a group of friends and said, "And I'll see you later, I'll be back later," to his mom around 8:30 or 9 a.m. But only hours later, odd things began happening. The first of those was that Michael's mom heard a knock at her door around 3:30 or 4 that afternoon. There outside were two women who informed her that Michael had driven his truck into a pond on Wilderness Trail Road and that the owner of the pond wanted the truck pulled out. Like any mom would, she was ready to go help, but since she didn't have a way to get a heavy truck out of a pond, Sandra called her daughter, whose husband had a Jeep, which they were hoping would be able to pull the truck out so they wouldn't have to call a tow truck. When they arrived at the pond, there was Michael's vehicle, just as the two women had said it would be. But Michael himself was nowhere to be found. The truck's two front tires only were submerged in the water. But the truck was indeed stuck. Though Jennifer's husband ended up having to call a friend with a Dodge truck to dislodge Michael's SUV, they were able to do so. Obviously, they were curious why Michael would have driven his vehicle here and why he would have abandoned it. It was then that Michael's mom began calling friends, family, everyone they knew, trying to figure out where Michael may have gone. Around 11 p.m. that evening of the 17th, Michael's mom, Sandra, was finally able to speak with a friend whose home Michael had said he would be visiting on that day, on Kentucky Highway 300, aka Knoblick Road. The friend told Sandra that Michael was currently there at 11 p.m., but that Michael was acting up, getting on the homeowner's nerves, and he even told Michael's mom that if he didn't stop, he was going to beat up Michael. She asked that the homeowner tell Michael to get home to have someone drive him. However, Michael didn't return home that evening, nor the following morning. In the meantime, Sandra called the homeowner again the next morning to ask about Michael. Here's what she told the murder police, quote, "Well, when I tried to call him the next day to say, well, Michael didn't come home, where's he at? He wouldn't answer. So finally, I messaged, where's Michael? He messaged back, don't know. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? When did he leave? Between 8:30 and 9 last night. And I said, where'd he go? He left walking, I think. I said, walking where? He said, towards Junction City, end quote. So now Sandra was hearing that no, Michael wasn't there when she called at 11 p.m., but that sometime around 8:30 or 9, several hours earlier, Michael had taken off on foot, walking toward Junction City, about a 2-mile walk from the home. Like it probably is for you listeners, this shift in story was ringing alarm bells for Sandra. Had Michael have left at 8:30 or 9, then the same person most certainly would not have said that Michael was still there, getting on his nerves, standing in front of him at 11 p.m., and because he made that comment about Michael being so annoying, it would have been on his mind. When Michael's sister Jennifer called her mom on the 18th to see if Michael had returned home, it was then that she learned of the conflicting information being given. In her interview with the murder police, Jennifer recalled the conversation with her mother and her mother's gut, telling her that something was wrong. That's when the two decided that they should go looking for Michael themselves. Oddly enough, by the time Jennifer made it to her mother's home to pick her up, there was a state trooper parked near the home. So Jennifer and Sandra stopped to alert the trooper that Michael hadn't returned home, that the people he said he had been with the evening before were providing conflicting information. They shared with him their fears that something was terribly wrong. Though I'm not sure of the exact timing, it was sometime around this point that while the two were filling up with gas at a local filling station before going out to look for Michael, Sandra received word back from someone who told her that they had dropped Michael off at the home on Knoblick Road the day before. The person who contacted Sandra was one of the two women who had stopped by her home to tell her about the truck. Jennifer told the murder police, quote, "They wanted to meet up with us. They wanted to know what we were going to be doing. We're like, well, we're going to try to find Michael, but we need to know where you took him. Take us to the house where you took him so we can see if he's still there." So we met up with them at a gas station, and they showed us where this house was. And then, once we got there, it got really weird from that point, end quote. Though Sandra and Jennifer didn't really know what they were looking for exactly at the home on Knoblick Road, they knew they had to see if there were any signs of where Michael may have gone. But almost immediately after arriving, the two knew with even more assurance that something had happened to Michael, because each step after that, they felt they were being lied to. Sandra began walking up and down the road near the home, looking for footprints along the road, any sign that Michael had gone in one particular direction. Sister Jennifer, on the other hand, attempted to go behind the home to look in the backyard and near the shed located there. However, she was blocked from looking by the individuals present at the home. Then Jennifer saw one of Michael's friends, whom she also knew, and decided to ask him for more information. Here's what she told the murder police, quote, "So I asked him, 'Have you seen Michael?' Yada yada. He's like, 'Yeah, I gave him a ride to the store last night.' So I was getting more information about that. And I was like, 'Well, where did you go after you took him to the store?' 'Well, I brought him back here.' 'Okay. Well then where did he go?' 'Well, then he left here walking.' Made no sense to me. Why would he leave here walking when he just had a ride? That didn't add up," end quote. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. If you're looking for gourmet meals, Factor is the place. Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Better yet, this month, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/coffeeandcases50 and use code coffeeandcases50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code coffeeandcases50 at factormeals.com/coffeeandcases50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. When they were not getting any answers that made sense, and with daylight quickly fading, Jennifer and her mom decided to drive the roads from the home toward Junction City. Maybe they would see something that would lead them in the right direction. But as they drove, something told Jennifer that they needed to go back to the home where Michael was last seen. So they did. This time, there were different, quote-unquote, friends in the driveway. Though this sight was off-putting, Jennifer thought maybe his friends had heard that Michael's family was looking for him and had shown up to help. But that was not the case. Instead, they just kept repeating that Michael had left on foot and didn't seem concerned enough to try to help. Jennifer and her mom left to look again for Michael along the roads when Jennifer got the gut feeling again to return to the home. This time they saw the person who had spoken with Sandra the evening before, the one who told her Michael was there at 11, and Sandra decided to confront him. Here's what Jennifer told the murder police, quote, "Mom says, 'Where's Michael?' He's like, 'Well, he left here walking.' And she was like, 'Okay, but when I talked to you last night at 11, you said he was acting up and you were going to basically beat him up or whatever.' She was like, 'So what happened?' He was like, 'Well, you know that never happened. He just left here walking towards Junction.' He was like, 'But he left his hat and shoes here. Do you want them?' And Mom, we both look at each other like, there's no way. There's no possible way Michael left here walking with no shoes on or his hat. He's not going to leave his hat or his shoes behind. Mom was like, well, if my son's shoes and hat is here, I want them. So he goes over to the porch, picks up the hat and the shoes, and comes back to the car. End quote. There, on the porch of the home, were Michael's hat and his shoes. According to Unsolved Appalachia, Sandra reported that there was no chance Michael would have, quote, taken off walking toward Junction City, end quote, as the story now went, without shoes. Sandra told Abigail Roberts of the Interior Journal in an article published February 2nd, 2023, quote, my son didn't go anywhere barefoot, she said. He wouldn't even walk in the house barefoot. End quote. Clearly getting nowhere with their search, given the obstacles of those present, Sandra again called the state police to give them the additional information. However, despite giving the information to the state trooper before their search at the home began, the person she now spoke with said that no information concerning a missing person named Michael Gourley had been entered. When a trooper responded to take an official report in the early morning hours of May 19th, Sandra asked if they would like to take Michael's hat and shoes, which she had brought home with her and placed in a plastic bag, or take Michael's truck, which now sat in her driveway, as evidence. However, those items were not taken. Even in giving the report, and this happens quite frequently, particularly in the cases of missing adults, Sandra felt that her concerns were taken with a grain of salt because Michael was an adult and could come and go as he pleased. Maybe he'd return home in a day or two. Not only that, but because their missing family member didn't meet the missing white woman syndrome stereotype, they feel that the investigation into Michael's disappearance wasn't treated with the urgency that it should have. Maggie and I have talked about the missing white woman syndrome on our show before, but it alludes to the fact that when someone goes missing, the cases that are, number one, treated with urgency, and number two, get the media coverage, are the ones of missing white women, while the cases for people of color or men are not given those same luxuries. Sandra told Abigail Roberts of the Interior Journal that Michael's case wasn't treated as it should have been, quote, because he's a male. He wasn't a blonde-haired woman. I'm sorry to say that, but that's the truth, end quote. Roberts went on to say, quote, Michael didn't have any money and was living with her, so the likelihood that he just took off on his own was very slim, end quote. Since it didn't seem as though in the months after Michael's disappearance that much was being done to look for him, the family continued their own efforts and obtained the help of a private investigator named Mike Ward. Even with the help of a private investigator who, like the family, refuses to stop looking for both clues and for answers, as months turned into years, the family's hope of finding Michael alive has slowly dwindled. Luckily, around 4 to 6 months after Michael's disappearance, the family finally got Detective Frank Thornberry assigned to the case. And Thornberry was someone who, like the family, took Michael's case seriously, collected evidence, and has continued to fight for developments in the case. In early 2017, February, a massive ground search on Wilderness Trail was conducted by family and friends, volunteers from the Boyle County and Junction City Fire Departments, and by those who just wanted to help out, all led by the Ohio chapter of Texas EquiSearch. According to Kendra Peek's article published on February 12, 2017, for AM News, quote, we will have one of two outcomes today, said Dave Rader, director for the Ohio chapter of Texas EquiSearch, as he addressed the volunteers before sending them out. Either we'll know where he's at, or we'll make sure where he's not. And the boots came out. Rader called the turnout unheard of. I applaud you. This is what a community does, he said, end quote. While the turnout of support was commendable, that search did not produce any answers. nor have following up on any leads that have come in since led to a person of interest being named. Still, Sandra Hastie now believes, as she told reporter Shay McAllister for WHAS 11, quote, "I think my son was beat there," meaning in the home where he was last seen, "was trying to get away, and then he was run over by a car," Hastie said. "The truck ended up submerged frontwards in the pond. I think they were trying to sink his truck, but it got stuck," end quote. From my understanding, at least part of this belief comes from both the timing and the direction and path Michael would have been walking had those individuals with whom Sandra and Jennifer spoke been telling the truth about Michael leaving on foot around 8:30 or 9 p.m. According to Unsolved Appalachia, quote, "This was a Sunday night, and the road does have several residences and farms scattered along the way. I'm also sure that there would have been some traffic since there were so many churches with evening services. Surely someone would have, at the very least, seen him walking. Yet there hasn't been any mention of an actual witness that has said they saw him walking down the road. Michael knew several people that lived on Noblick Road. He could have stopped by and asked for a ride from any of them," end quote. That's why any time Sandra hears that human remains have been discovered, she feels the deeply penetrating pain of both fear that it is Michael and the disappointment when it's not, and it means that they still can't put his remains at rest. It's conflicting emotions that Sandra Hastie and her daughter Jennifer feel about the case in general. Sandra told Fox 56 for the May 18, 2018 article titled "Boyle County Mother Determined to Find Answers 3 Years After Son's Disappearance," quote, "Sad part of it is, he was among people he thought was his friends. He even graduated with one of them," end quote. She continued in that article, quote, "I've got a lot of anger built up in me. That's what keeps me fueled up," end quote. But alongside the anger is also the sadness that one of Michael's so-called friends could be responsible for what happened to Michael. You see, his family not only believe that Michael was murdered, but they also believe they know who did it. Was Michael at the home at 11 p.m. as the individual initially said, and something happened to him afterward? Or was that person mistaken? Why would Michael have left his shoes if he left of his own free will? Why did his quote-unquote friends not seem concerned enough to help look for him? What was it that made the two women at least concerned enough that they not only alerted Michael's mom to the location of his truck, but also directed them to the home? Do they know more than what they've previously stated? Those are the very questions Detective Thornberry once answered as well. In fact, he told Abigail Roberts of the Interior Journal that he interviewed more than 50 people, some on multiple occasions, and that he continues to follow up on every lead or tip that comes in. Thornberry told Roberts in that interview, quote, "Sandra asked me, please don't let this case go cold," Thornberry said. "I'm actively working it. I've gone as far as Indiana, I've been to Western Kentucky, I've been to Eastern Kentucky. Since Michael is technically still a missing person," Thornberry said, "a new KSP intel analyst will be looking at the case. KSP has an intel analyst that solely works on missing people. I've reached out to her. She's working on it," he said. "Honestly, I just need someone to tell me where he is, and I need to go find him. I've worked on this case for 7 years," end quote. The hard part, as reported by Shay McAllister for WHAS 11, is that missing persons cases are often not treated as murders, even though many of them are indeed cases involving foul play. She astutely stated the following, quote, "By the time it's believed to be a homicide, the case has gone cold. The trail is cold and there's nothing to look at. Without a body or a murder weapon, it's hard to build a case. Gourley's family has yet to find either, putting stress on the family and investigators," end quote. Then there's the added conundrum of one of Michael's friends, Linda Marie Price, part of that exact same friend group, going missing just weeks after Michael did. Though we don't have the facts to link the two cases, the shared circle of friends is worth noting, as well as the fact that she, too, has never been located. Reporter Kendra Peek interviewed Detective Thornberry for her June 8, 2017 article for the Advocate Messenger and asked him about a potential link between the cases, to which he acknowledged the strangeness of that coincidence, but stated for the record, quote, "Whether the disappearances are linked, I do not know," he said. "All I can tell you is I keep on working them," end quote. Despite whether the two cases are linked, Lisa Price's mother and Michael Gorley's mother have been able to lean on one another during the past several years. Lisa's mom, Mary Sargent, told Peek about her relationship with Michael's mom and about the difficulties of mourning a missing child, saying, quote, "Sandra has been my backbone through this. We've been there for each other," Sargent said. "It's been hard. It's been a slow grieving process with no closure. Every day I wonder, is that phone going to ring? Am I going to get answers? There are days I try not to cry," Sargent said. "I try to have a normal day. Yesterday was not one of those days," end quote. It's an ongoing battle that Sandra Hasty, Michael's mom, understands all too well. Perhaps that's why Michael's mom has become a victim's advocate. Not only does she continue to raise awareness concerning Michael's case, but helps so many other families of missing loved ones. Illustrating that mission are the many Facebook pages she has created and moderates for that purpose. Missing and Murdered Loved Ones in Kentucky, Missing Men, Teens, and Boys Nationwide in honor of Michael Gorley, and Missing Women in Kentucky and surrounding states. For her son specifically, Sandra Hasty has held candlelight vigils, not only to represent Michael's memory, but also to symbolize her hope that future answers may lead to justice. She told Fox 56 for an article published May 18, 2018, quote, "What's done in the dark cannot be hidden for long," end quote. What she says has a lot of weight, especially if the guilt of knowledge is weighing on one or more of the several people who were present on the evening of May 17, 2015, or who have heard over the years something about what happened. "I just pray that someone with information has finally had enough of the hiding and of the trying to forget, that they've had enough of the pretending to know what it means to be a friend, and that they finally have the courage, even if done anonymously, to share information and bring some semblance of peace to the suffering family." Michael Gorley was 6 feet tall and weighed approximately 220 pounds. He had brown hair and brown eyes and usually kept his facial hair trimmed in a goatee. In terms of identifiable marks, he had several scars as well as tattoos. He had, according to the Charley Project, a small scar about an inch long above the right side of his jaw, a small scar about an inch long on his right wrist, a scar on his right eyebrow, a scar from appendix surgery, and a scar on his right side hairline due to a car wreck. As for tattoos, he had Gorley tattooed on his right upper arm in blue ink, a cross tattooed on his left upper arm, the name Stephanie tattooed on the inside of his right forearm, an M tattooed on the right side of his chest in blue, orange, and green, and a Chinese symbol on his outer calf. He was last seen wearing blue and white Hawaiian print swimming trunks. Anyone with information concerning Michael's case, either his location or about what may have happened to him on the night he disappeared, is asked to call the Kentucky State Police Post 7 at 859-623-2404. You can text a tip to the number 67283 and type KSP tip in the message field, followed by a space and the information you have. Or you can go to the Post 7 website to leave a tip anonymously. That website, along with a phone number, are listed in the show notes.
Again, please like and join our Facebook page, Coffee and Cases Podcast, to continue the conversation and see images related to this episode. As always, follow us on Twitter at Cases Coffee, on Instagram at Coffee Cases Podcast, or you can always email us suggestions to coffeeandcasespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about our podcast so more people can be reached to possibly help bring some closure to these families. Don't forget to rate our show and leave us a comment as well. We hope to hear from you soon.
Stay together.
Stay safe.
We'll see you next week.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.